The deep blue sky of evening opened once more, and a few pallid stars appeared, like small white holes in the canopy above the crescent moon. "It's good to be able to see again," said Frodo, breathing deep. "Do you know, I thought for a bit that I'd lost my sight, from the lightning or something else worse. I could see nothing, nothing at all, until the grey rope came down. It seemed to shimmer somehow." "It does look sort of silver in the dark," said Sam. "Never noticed it before, though I can't remember as I've ever had it out since I first stowed it. But if you're so set on climbing, Mr. Frodo, how are you going to use it?" 30 ells, or say, about 18 fathom, that's no more than your guess at the height of the cliff." Frodo thought for a while. "Make it fast to that stump, Sam," he said. "Then I think you shall have your wish this time and go first. I'll lower it, and you need do no more than use your feet and hands to fend yourself off the rock. Though, if you put your weight on some of the ledges and give me a rest, it'll help. When you're down, I'll follow. I feel quite myself again now." "Very well," said Sam heavily. "If it must be, let's get it over." He took up the rope and made it fast over the stump nearest to the brink. Then the other end he tied about his own waist. Reluctantly he turned and prepared to go over the edge a second time. It did not, however, turn out half as bad as he had expected. The rope seemed to give him confidence, though he shut his eyes more than once when he looked down between his feet. There was one awkward spot, where there was no ledge and the wall was sheer and even undercut for a short space. There he slipped and swung out on the silver line. But Frodo lowered him slowly and steadily, and it was over at last. His chief fear had been that the rope length would give out while he was still high up, but there was still a good bite in Frodo's hands when Sam came to the bottom and called up, "I'm down!" His voice came up clearly from below, but Frodo couldn't see him. His grey elven cloak had melted into the twilight. Frodo took rather more time to follow him. He had the rope about his waist, and it was fast above, and he'd shortened it so that it would pull him up before he reached the ground. Still, he didn't want to risk a fall, and he hadn't quite Sam's faith in this slender grey line. He found two places, all the same, where he had to trust wholly to it. Smooth surfaces where there was no hold even for his strong hobbit fingers, and the ledges were far apart. But at last he too was down. "Well," he cried, "we've done it. We've escaped from the Emyn Muil. And now what next, I wonder? Maybe we shall soon be sighing for good hard rock underfoot again." But Sam didn't answer. He was staring back up the cliff. "Ninny hammers," he said. "Noodles, my beautiful rope. There it is tied to a stump, and we're at the bottom. Just as nice a little stair for that slinking golem as we could leave. Better put up a signpost to say which way we've gone. I thought it seemed a bit too easy. If you can think of any way we could have both used the rope and yet brought it down with us, then you can pass on to me Ninny Hammer, or any other name your gaffer gave you," said Frodo. "Climb up and untie it and let yourself down if you want to." Sam scratched his head. "No, I can't think how, begging your pardon," he said. "But I don't like leaving it, and that's a fact." He stroked the rope's end and shook it gently. "It goes hard parting with anything I brought out of the elf country. Made by Galadriel herself, too, maybe." "Galadriel," he murmured, nodding his head mournfully. He looked up and gave one last pull to the rope, as if in farewell. To the complete surprise of both the hobbits, it came loose. Sam fell over, and the long grey coils slithered silently down on top of him. Frodo laughed. "Who tied the rope?" he said. "A good thing it held as long as it did. To think that I trusted all my weight to your knot." Sam didn't laugh. "I may not be much good at climbing, Mr. Frodo," he said in injured tones, "but I do know something about rope and about knots. It's in the family, as you might say. Why, my granddad, and my Uncle Andy after him, him that was the gaffer's eldest brother, he had a rope walk over by Tyfield many a year, and I put as fast a hitch over the stump as any one could have done in the shire or out of it. Then the rope must have broken. Frayed on the rock edge, I expect, said Frodo. I bet it didn't, said Sam, in an even more injured voice. He stooped and examined the ends. Nor it hasn't neither, not a strand. Then I'm afraid it must have been the knot, said Frodo. Sam shook his head and didn't answer. He was passing the rope through his fingers thoughtfully. Have it your own way, Mr. Frodo, he said at last. But I think the rope came off itself when I called. He coiled it up and stowed it lovingly in his pack. It certainly came, said Frodo, and that's the chief thing. But now we've got to think of our next move. Night will be on us soon. How beautiful the stars are and the moon. They do cheer the heart, don't they, said Sam, looking up. Elvish they are, somehow, and the moon's growing. We haven't seen him for a night or two in this cloudy weather. He's beginning to give quite a light. Yes, said Frodo. But he won't be full for some days. I don't think we'll try the marshes by the light of half a moon. Under the first shadows of night they started out on the next stage of their journey. After a while Sam turned and looked back at the way they'd come. The mouth of the gully was a black notch in the dim cliff. I'm glad we've got the rope, he said. We've set a little puzzle for that footpad, anyhow. He can try his nasty, flappy feet on those ledges. They picked their steps away from the skirts of the cliff, among a wilderness of boulders and rough stones, wet and slippery with a heavy rain. The ground still fell away sharply. They'd not gone very far when they came upon a great fissure that yawned suddenly black before their feet. It was not wide, but it was too wide to jump across in the dim light. They thought they could hear water gurgling in its depths. It curved away on their left northward, back towards the hills, and so barred their road in that direction, at any rate while darkness lasted. "We'd better try a way back southwards along the line of the cliff, I think," said Sam. "We might find some nook there, or even a cave or something." "I suppose so," said Frodo. "I'm tired, and I don't think I can scramble among stones much longer tonight, though I grudge the delay. I wish there was a clear path in front of us. Then I'd go on till my legs gave way." They didn't find the going any easier at the broken feet of the Emin Muil. Nor did Sam find any nook or hollow to shelter in. Only bare, stony slopes frowned over by the cliff, which now rose again, higher and more sheer as they went back. In the end, worn out, they just cast themselves on the ground under the lee of a boulder lying not far from the foot of the precipice. There for some time they sat huddled mournfully together in the cold, stony night, while sleep crept upon them in spite of all they could do to hold it off. The moon now rode high and clear. Its thin white light lit up the faces of the rocks and drenched the cold, frowning walls of the cliff, turning all the wide, looming darkness into a chill, pale grey scored with black shadows. "Well," said Frodo, standing up and drawing his cloak more closely round him, "you sleep for a bit, Sam, and take my blanket. I'll walk up and down on sentry for a while." Suddenly he stiffened, and stooping he gripped Sam by the arm. "What's that?" he whispered. "Look over there on the cliff." Sam looked and breathed in sharply through his teeth. "Shh," he said. "That's what it is. It's that golem. Snakes and adders. And to think that I thought that we'd puzzle him with our bit of a climb. Look at him, like a nasty crawling spider on a wall." Down the face of a precipice, sheer and almost smooth it seemed in the pale moonlight, a small black shape was moving, with its thin limbs splayed out. Maybe its soft, clinging hands and toes were finding crevices and holes that no hobbit could ever have seen or used, but it looked as if it were just creeping down on sticky pads, like some large, prowling thing of insect kind. And it was coming down head first, as if it was smelling its way. Now and again it lifted its head slowly, turning it right back on its long, skinny neck, and the hobbits caught a glimpse of two small, pale, gleaming lights, its eyes that blinked at the moon for a moment and then were quickly lidded again.
"Do you think he can see us?" said Sam.
"I don't know," said Frodo quietly, "but I think not. It's hard even for friendly eyes to see those elven cloaks. I cannot see you in the shadow, even at a few paces, and I've heard that he doesn't like sun or moon."
"Then why is he coming down just here?" asked Sam.
"Quietly, Sam," said Frodo. "He can smell us, perhaps, and he can hear as keen as elves, I believe. I think he has heard something now, our voices probably. We did a lot of shouting away back there, and we were talking far too loudly until a minute ago."
"Well, I'm sick of him," said Sam.
"He's come once too often for me, and I'm going to have a word with him if I can. I don't suppose we could give him the slip now, anyway." Drawing his grey hood well over his face, Sam crept stealthily towards the cliff.
"Careful,"
whispered Frodo, coming behind. "Don't alarm him. He's much more dangerous than he looks." The black crawling shape was now three-quarters of the way down, and perhaps 50 feet or less above the cliff's foot. Crouching stone still in the shadow of a large boulder, the hobbits watched him. He seemed to have come to a difficult passage, or to be troubled about something. They could hear him snuffling, and now and again there was a harsh hiss of breath that sounded like a curse. He lifted his head, and they thought they heard him spit. Then he moved on again. Now they could hear his voice creaking and whistling.
"Ah, cautious, my precious. More haste, less speed. We mustn't risk our neck, must we, precious? And oh, precious."
He lifted his head again, blinked at the moon, and quickly shut his eyes.
"We hate it," he hissed. "Nasty, shivery light it is. It spies on us, precious. It hurts our eyes."
He was getting lower now, and the hisses became sharper and clearer.
"Where is it? Where is it, my precious? My precious? It's ours, it is, and we want it. The thieves, the thieves, the filthy little thieves. Where are they with my precious? Curse them. We hate them."
"It doesn't sound as if he knew we were here, does it?" whispered Sam. "And what's his precious? Does he mean the..."
"Shh,"
breathed Frodo. "He's getting near now, near enough to hear a whisper." Indeed, Gollum had suddenly paused again, and his large head on its scrawny neck was lolling from side to side as if he was listening. His pale eyes were half unlidded. Sam restrained himself, though his fingers were twitching. His eyes, filled with anger and disgust, were fixed on the wretched creature, as he now began to move again, still whispering and hissing to himself. At last he was no more than a dozen feet from the ground, right above their heads. From that point there was a sheer drop, for the cliff was slightly undercut, and even Gollum could not find a hold of any kind. He seemed to be trying to twist round so as to go legs first, when suddenly, with a shrill, whistling shriek, he fell. As he did so, he curled his legs and arms up round him, like a spider whose descending thread is snapped. Sam was out of his hiding in a flash, and crossed the space between him and the cliff foot in a couple of leaps. Before Gollum could get up, he was on top of him. But he found Gollum more than he bargained for, even taken like that, suddenly, off his guard after a fall. Before Sam could get a hold, long legs and arms were wound round him, pinning his arms, and a clinging grip, soft but horribly strong, was squeezing him like slowly tightening cords. Clammy fingers were feeling for his throat. Then sharp teeth bit into his shoulder. All he could do was to butt his hard head sideways into the creature's face. Gollum hissed and spat, but he didn't let go. Things would have gone ill with Sam if he'd been alone. But Frodo sprang up and drew Sting from its sheath. With his left hand he drew back Gollum's head by his thin, lank hair, stretching his long neck and forcing his pale, venomous eyes to stare up at the sky. "Let go, Gollum," he said. "This is Sting. You've seen it before, once upon a time. Let go, or you'll feel it this time. I'll cut your throat." Gollum collapsed and went as loose as wet string. Sam got up, fingering his shoulder. His eyes smouldered with anger, but he could not avenge himself. His miserable enemy lay grovelling on the stones, whimpering.
"Don't hurt us. Don't let them hurt us, precious. They won't hurt us, will they? Nice little hobbitses. We didn't mean them no harm, but they jumps on us like cats on poor mices, they did, precious. And we're so lonely. We'll be nice to them, very nice, if they'll be nice to us, won't we? Yes, yes."
"Well, what's to be done with it?" said Sam. "Tie it up, so's it can't come sneaking after us no more, I say."
"But that would kill us,
whimpered Gollum.
"Cruel little hobbitses, tie us up in the cold, hard lands and leave us. Gollum, Gollum!"
Sobs welled up in his gobbling throat. "No," said Frodo. "If we kill him, we must kill him outright. But we can't do that, not as things are. Poor wretch. He's done us no harm." "Oh, hasn't he?" said Sam, rubbing his shoulder. "Anyway, he meant to. And he means to, I'll warrant. Throttle us in our sleep. That's his plan." "I dare say," said Frodo. "But what he means to do is another matter." He paused for a while in thought. Gollum lay still, but stopped whimpering. Sam stood glowering over him. It seemed to Frodo then that he heard, quite plainly but far off, voices out of the past. What a pity Bilbo did not stab the vile creature when he had a chance.
Pity? It was pity that stayed his hand. Pity and mercy, not to strike without need.
I don't feel any pity for Gollum. He deserves death.
Deserves death? I dare say he does. Many that live deserve death, and some die that deserve life. Can you give that to them? Then be not too eager to deal out death in the name of justice, fearing for your own safety. Even the wise cannot see all ends.
Very well, he answered aloud, lowering the sword. But still I'm afraid. And yet, as you see, I won't touch the creature, for now that I see him, I do pity him. Sam stared at his master, who seemed to be speaking to someone who was not there. Gollum lifted his head.
Yes, wretched we are, precious, he whined. Misery, misery. Hobbits won't kill us. Nice hobbits.
No, we won't, said Frodo. But we won't let you go, either. You're full of wickedness and mischief, Gollum. You'll have to come with us, that's all, while we keep an eye on you. But you must help us, if you can. One good turn deserves another.
Yes, yes, indeed, said Gollum, sitting up. Nice hobbits! We'll come with them, find them safe paths in the dark. Yes, we will. And where are they going in these cold, hard lands, we wonders? Yes, we wonders.
He looked up at them, and a faint light of cunning and eagerness flickered for a second in his pale, blinking eyes. Sam scowled at him and sucked his teeth. But he seemed to sense that there was something odd about his master's mood, and that the matter was beyond argument. All the same, he was amazed at Frodo's reply. Frodo looked straight into Gollum's eyes, which flinched and twisted away. "You know that, or you guess well enough, Smeagol," he said, quietly and sternly. "We are going to Mordor, of course, and you know the way there, I believe."
"Hush," said Gollum, covering his ears with his hands, as if such frankness, and the open speaking of the names, hurt him. "We guessed, yes, we guessed," he whispered, "and we didn't want them to go, did we? No, precious, not the nice hobbits. Ashes, ashes and dust and thirst there is, and pits, 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 and orcs, thousands of orcs. Nice hobbits mustn't go to those places.
So you have been there, Frodo insisted. And you're being drawn back there, aren't you?
Yes, yes, no, shrieked Gollum. Once by accident it was, wasn't it, Precious? Yes, by accident. But we won't go back, no, no.
Then suddenly his voice and language changed, and he sobbed in his throat, and spoke but not to them.
Leave me alone, Gollum. You hurt me. How my poor hands... Gollum, I don't want to come back. I can't find it. I'm tired. We can't find it. Gollum, no, nowhere. They're always awake. Dwarves, men and elves, terrible elves with bright eyes. I can't find it.
He got up and clenched his long hand into a bony, fleshless knot, shaking it towards the east.
We won't, he cried. Not for you.
Then he collapsed again.
Gollum, Gollum,
he whimpered with his face to the ground.
Don't look at us. Go away. Go to sleep.
He won't go away or go to sleep at your command, Smeagol, said Frodo. But if you really wish to be free of him again, then you must help me. And that, I fear, means finding us a path towards him. But you needn't go all the way, not beyond the gates of his land. Gollum sat up again and looked at him under his eyelids.
He's over there, he cackled. Always there. Orcs will take you all the way. Easy to find orcs east of the river. Don't ask Smeagol. Poor Smeagol. He went away long ago. They took his precious, and he's lost now.
Perhaps we'll find him again, if you come with us, said Frodo.
No, no, never. He's lost his precious, said Gollum.
Get up, said Frodo. Gollum stood up and backed away against the cliff. Now, said Frodo, can you find a path easier by day or by night? We're tired. But if you choose the night, we'll start tonight.
The big lights hurt our eyes, they do, Gollum whined. Not under the white face, not yet. It will go behind the hills soon, yes. Rest a bit first, nice hobbits.
Then sit down, said Frodo, and don't move.